The Blaze Radio Network. On demand. Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Arr! Hashtag shiver me timbers. I remember all the pirates saying that. Disneyland's Pirates of the Caribbean ride is getting the feminist makeover now that, well, not everybody, in fact, no one was clamoring for. You know the scene, if you've ever been to the Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, the audio animatronic robotic females are being auctioned off as brides to some male pirates. And there's a voluptuous red-haired robot that seems, you know, not as enthused about getting married to, you know, the pirate after the auction as you might think. Disney says that that sent a very sexist message and it's going away. Okay, I would, I'm pretty sure pirates, you know, were sexist. It kind of goes with the rape and pillage part of being a pirate. I mean, I just, the last thing, we can pillage all you want, but don't you dare touch the ladies. Not that I'm noticing that they're ladies at all. They might be men, and I'm perfectly fine with that. I mean, come on. First of all, may I just say, and I know this is deep and hard to understand, this is stupid. Okay, this is stupid. The looting is also a problem. I mean, that's not exactly the moral high ground, Disney. One Disney fan said, "It's uncomfortable for me to even see women being sold into bondage and human trafficking. I can't imagine what little girls think about this." I don't know. Maybe stay away from pirates? That would be a good thing to teach, wouldn't you? I mean, oh my gosh. Now, I don't know if any kids have watched pirates, met pirates, but these pirates are robots. They're audio animatronic pirates. They're not real. By the way, and I know that we can't actually, there is no objective reality, but even in a world where there is no reality, it's a theme park. In a world where there is no reality. Okay, it's a ride, and it's been a ride that's been open for 51 years. Disney first announced this change last summer at the fan convention, and the audience started to boo. Now, that didn't seem to matter because the company is shutting down the ride for the next 2 months while they make alterations to it anyway, so they don't really care. I mean, it's Disney. What do they care? Disney executives finally going to be able to sleep at night because they've made the change. Oh, my gosh. Whew. You know, I haven't been able to sleep since I started working here, thinking about the slave auction that has been happening. Those women have been sold in that auction for 51 years, and we haven't done a damn thing. We're finally stopping the madness. Every 2.5 minutes. They are still being sold. They have to relive it over and over and over again. You know, I mean, okay. Maybe it's time for Disney to start taking a hard look, you know, at everything they do. Because I think it'll make the park much better. For instance, Dumbo, the flying elephant. Really? So you notice that you have the elephant attached to a pole? You've just rammed a giant pole into the side of the elephant, and now you're making him carry kids. You've hollowed out the inside of the elephant so my kids can sit inside where his heart used to be. Tarzan's treehouse? King of the jungle. He's a white man. He's not king of the jungle. What are you doing? And then on top of that, objectification of males? He scampers around in nothing but his underpants. And I think he's hetero. While you're at it, Maybe you should edit out all of the scenes where women are harassed and objectified in the Pirates of the Caribbean movie. Or, I'll just be crazy on this for a second. Maybe, you know, in Aladdin, that sweet young woman who you have dressed as a whore. I think somebody should take some crayons and paint a burqa on her. Because how are Muslims going to watch that movie? How are they going to do that in the Middle East? Beauty and the Beast? That whole thing is about a female held hostage by a verbally abusive white male that's finally revealed himself as the monster he is. How about the child neglect and endangerment in Peter Pan? He's being chased by a creepy man with a hook for a hand. I can't imagine what children must think about that. Yes, it's a story that they tell at the campfire about the guy who went insane and then escaped up the road. And now he's just got this hook and he might be here to kill us. So let's get in the car. And when they got home, there was nothing but a bloody hook on the car door. They almost had him. We don't tell that story. Disney, you're out of your mind. I mean, the 1950s, do you remember the communist witch hunt vibe? Do you remember that? And you know how that was remembered now? This is the current culture. And you know, you talk about, oh, I don't like these Christians who are all after the morality police telling us what we can and can't do. You're down to taking audio animatronic robots out because you think the pirates are being sexist. You know what? You could put a bunch of little boys in there, too, because I don't think the pirates really cared. They were pirates. The only certain thing that would be left to approve would be, no, not Mickey Mouse. He's a mouse that you have enslaved and then humanized and made him part of this throwaway culture. You know, a true culprit in the objectification and abuse of women? I don't know. What do you say, the porn industry? Nah. No. I'm sorry, you people in Hollywood, you're completely fine with that.
Arr.
It's Thursday, March 15th.
Arr.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Me mateys, we can't objectify these women or sell them, marry them off as brides. Let's just go watch a good porno.
Was it Shiver Me Timbers?
Yes. No, hashtag.
Sorry.
Hashtag Shiver Me Timbers.
So stupid.
Is that the dumbest thing you've ever heard?
Yes. It's just a I feel like we could just do a whole show every day with just new examples of the dumbest thing you've ever heard. New record set.
First of all, do you know why people booed? You know why they did it at the fan club? The worst place you could do that. Do you know why?
You're the Disney nerd here, so
yeah,
no, I don't.
Okay. This is the last ride that Walt Disney personally approved and directed.
Oh, really?
So this is his last gasp as he's like, hand me a cigarette. You know what we do? have an auction here. So it's like for Disney fans, this is a sacred storyline. It really is a sacred storyline. So they announced this at the fan club where you've got all the geeks like me that are like, what?
Yeah. You don't violate nerd culture to their faces.
You don't.
No.
You don't.
No.
And I mean, what part of pirates? What are we doing? Oh, okay. So now our kids, you know, if we continue down this road, our kids will be begging us to, can we finally go to Yemen or Somalia? They're pirates there. Oh, no big deal. They're great people. No, they're pirates. They're pirates.
How do the Pittsburgh Pirates stay in existence, the baseball team, just to make sure, Glenn, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, my gosh. Wait a minute.
That's hurtful. They're targeting women, these people.
They're actual pirates and they play baseball?
Yes, absolutely.
Either Pittsburgh, you're in trouble, or I have pirates all wrong.
How about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
Oh, my gosh.
How can that be a thing? All these teams should be banned immediately.
Well, I mean, if you've ever been to Gasparilla Parade in Tampa, they may be auctioning off women to marry by 3 o'clock in the afternoon in the parade.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely part of the parade.
Isn't that the mayor? He's auctioning women off. Yeah, it's just part of the parade. Have another.
You can't judge it by the afternoon. I mean, it's...
Well, when I say afternoon, I mean 1 o'clock.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so afternoon. Technically it is afternoon.
It's a pirate storyline.
It is.
This is part of it. Yes. It's like you're going to make Game of Thrones with no violence and right. no, you know...
And no dragons.
No dragons.
No dragons.
No sex. Because they treat women terribly in Game of Thrones, I'm sure. But it's not, it's part of the storyline.
So I was watching, saw a show, I do this every time. I'm like, it's a story about, Versailles. What is the name of the show? Oh, yeah, Versailles. So it's some Game of Thrones kind of show about King Louis, who was, you know, king at 4. But then when he turned, you know, in his 20s, his mom dies and he becomes king and he has to make the decisions and stuff. And he's building Versailles. He wasn't good to women.
Really?
No, he wasn't. It seems like a trend back then where he could go all Katy Perry. Mm-hmm. At any time,
right?
He could just grab you and kiss you, mm-hmm. and other things. Yeah. So I don't know if Hollywood watches their own shows or their own movies, but historically speaking, some guys were bad.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And it's interesting to see the complaints today about how evil men are.
My daughter started watching Mad Men for the first time. And she said, "Dad, have you ever seen it?" And I said, yeah. And she's like, "I couldn't believe it." And I'm like, "Yeah, well, that's the way it was. That's the way it was. It just guys were like that." If you watch The Post, you know, the one with...
The Washington Post story with Tom Hanks. And,
yeah.
Okay, so mediocre Meryl Streep. That's her full name, by the way.
I don't really. I mean, if you have to balance all of her movies, I would agree with you. For instance, I think it makes you below mediocre, even if everything you've ever done, you've won an Oscar and you actually deserved it. Mm-hmm. Okay, like you were conservative, but you were still winning the Oscars.
Sure,
just that ABBA movie.
Oh my God.
Makes you below mediocre.
Yes.
Okay.
Agreed.
So I'll agree with you. Mm-hmm. But anyway, she has a line in that movie where she said, you know, I'm not the one. Your father was the one that was supposed to run the paper. Okay. It was your dad that was supposed to run the paper, not me. And she's talking to her daughter and she said, because we never thought of it. I'm a woman. It was different. We just never thought of it. So it was a different world. Well, now we're thinking about it. No. I think there was a time a couple of years ago that we were thinking about it. Now we're just feeling about it.
Mm.
Now we're just feeling about it. I went to Pirates of the Caribbean. And there is a dog at the end that has access to the keys. And then these men are trying to trick the dog with a bone. And he's not, because he's smart, because he's a dog. He's not being tricked, but eventually, it's been there for 51 years, eventually he's going to trick that dog. And dogs shouldn't be tricked by people in jail. We're going to, you know what? We always embrace your feelings. We see how you feel, and others may... Of course, no one in their right mind, but others may feel that way. So we're going to remove the prisoners And so we'll just leave the dog there. But we're going to make the dog mayor. He'll be a dog mayor. And he'll be abolishing all prisons for other dogs. Now, it doesn't really fit in the Pirates of the Caribbean storyline, but we feel what you're feeling.
And that's what's important right now, the feels.
It is.
What are your
feels?
No
thinking. No thinking. None. You know, okay, all right. You want to be in, can you get the Blind Orphan audio ready, please?
I can. It's okay, so part of a longer...
There is a... Yeah, clip. But is it part of a longer clip or is it separate?
It's part of a longer clip.
Okay, so... I want to show you offensive. I just want to show you offensive. And I want to show you offensive for a reason. Freedom of speech. We'll do that coming up in a second. I was listening to the Glenn Beck program today, and I just felt that he was raping me. He was verbally raping me on radio. Yes, I live in India, but I heard what Hillary Clinton said he thought about people. You want your home sold on time and for the most money without all sorts of excuses? If you need to sell your home or buy a home, go to realestateagentsitrust.com. They will get the job done. Realestateagentsitrust.com. Over 1,000 agents all over America that are just like you. Their bond is their word. They're fans of this show. They share your sensibility. Fair play, good price, good profit for everybody. They're fully vetted and handpicked by the team at realestateagentsitrust.com for their knowledge, their skill, and their track record. That's really important. Are they one of these real estate agents that A, don't have the skill or the expertise, or are these guys the ones who go in and sell it and don't just list it so nobody else gets it, but actually goes and sell it for the most amount of money? That's who your real estate agent should be and will be if you go to realestateagentsitrust.com. Thousands of families in this audience have already put realestateagentsitrust.com. People's houses are selling for the most amount of money, and they're selling quickly. Realestateagentsitrust.com. Sell or buy your house today with realestateagentsitrust.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So, Ricky Gervais just put out a new Netflix special, and it is really offensive, but really, really funny. And his whole point is, you know, let's stop being offended by everything. He talks a little bit about how he teases his girlfriend about how the jokes he's going to tell just to freak her out. And he said, you know, when I was going to do the Golden Globes, these were some of the jokes that I told her I was going to tell.
Even on the day, on the way to the red carpet, or in the limo, just to wind her up, I said, oh, I'm going to start off with a funny little one-liner, just an old-fashioned joke. She went, oh, what? I said, what did the deaf, dumb, and blind orphan get for Christmas? And Jane went, I don't know. I said, cancer.
Oh, it's a little dark.
Really funny.
He's really funny. That you've been playing that as we were prepping for the show.
It's taken me 3 days to get through the thing, but
really
it is
solid.
Hysterical. My gosh, it's hysterical. You know, he makes the point in the end, and he tries to drive it home all the time that there are, and we'll go. I want to play a couple of other clips where he got in trouble about talking about Kate Jenner. And he's like, you have to understand the joke. You have to understand the joke. And people don't. They're just offended. And
reactionary is what they
reactionary
are.
And they're just not thinking. You know, he said, you know, they keep taking referendums because the politicians are too, you know, weak and spineless. And he's like, you know, let's ask the people. He said, let's not ask the people. Let's really not. Do you know how stupid people are? He said, when we can take off the little sign off of bleach that says do not drink, then let's ask the people. In fact, let's take that off for 2 years. then let's hold a referendum.
It's interesting too, because people say it's not funny if you have to explain the joke. He proves that completely wrong.
Completely wrong. And special. You've got to hear this about Caitlyn Jenner when we come back.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Shiver, hashtag MeToombers. The debate is raging on this morning as it has been announced that Disney is finally doing something about the oppressive audio animatronic pirates that have been in their employ for 51 years now, and they have done nothing to stop the objectification and sale of robotic women by other robotic pirates, because it is very, very dangerous for little girls to see that kind of treatment of women by robotic pirates.
They're very influenced by media, Glenn.
Well, no, not movies or Cosmo, you know, or games or anything like that. Just
no, of course not.
Robotic pirates.
Hugely.
On a boat ride.
Hugely influential on people, a
yes,
little girl's
you
lives.
You can't just show them that kind of stuff, you know? Have them at home where it's safe with Cosmo and television and, you know,
porn,
porn, mm-hmm. You know, or, you know, Pregnant in 16 on MTV. You know, let's have some wholesome, you know, positive stereo role models in their life. Not these strangely white men pirates. I digress. I think we're all on the same page about stopping the sale of these women, the perpetual sale of these women. They never are actually married to these pirates. They're forced to live just the auction block over and over and over again every 2.5 minutes. And I think we can all agree that's got to stop. It's got to stop. Forget about actual slavery, okay? Forget about it. In fact, don't look at it.
No.
Don't look at it. Yes. Do not look at actual slavery that is happening to women and children all around the world in the Middle East forever. I mean, that just hashtag that. If you have to look at it, just hashtag. But don't do anything about it, okay? We've got to organize. And thank goodness we didn't have to, because Disney is a caring company. But we have to organize and stop any audio animatronic perpetual auction of women.
Of the three kinds of slavery that most people discuss, number one, obviously, robotic slavery.
Yeah. Well,
you should always react terribly to that.
Okay.
You should always really make sure, act as if it's a current issue, the slavery in the United States of America. Mm-hmm. That is a couple centuries ago.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
You know what? You should not react to it all. The current slavery going on right now that's bigger than any of the slavery that went on hundreds
yeah.
of years ago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You
whatever. Shut really up. I don't want to hear that. I have to tell you, if I had a dollar for every study that has been produced in the last 51 years that showed the harmful effects that girls have had being exposed to that horror in Disneyland, I'd have less than a dollar today. And I think we need to think about that.
Probably should.
Well, that requires us to think. So let's just feel about something else.
I want to be offended.
Okay.
Tell me how I can
okay.
be offended today.
All right, I'm going to help you, okay? Let's all be pissed at Ricky Gervais. Let's just be pissed at him, all right? Do not laugh. Do not consider this a joke, because it is not a joke. Ricky Gervais has done a new Netflix special, and it's called, I think, just Humanity. It's really funny, but I warn you, you're going to be offended, especially if you're Bill Cosby, and he's talking about jokes that he was considering telling about Bill Cosby.
And about 3 days before this last one, right, just to wind Jane up, I said, oh, I got a good intro. She went, what? I said, Bill Cosby would make our next presenter sleep on the couch. Please welcome Helen Mirren. I didn't do it. She went, you're not going to do it. I said, no, I'm not going to do that. Next day, I got her again. I said, is this too much then? I said, not even Bill Cosby carries enough tranquilizer to bring down this next magnificent beast. Please welcome Melissa McCarthy. I didn't do it. I'd never tell a joke like that. It's horrible. I was just doing it to annoy Jane. I'd never even...
Okay, so again, his point is you have to understand a joke. And so he tells a joke that he did do on stage that everybody got upset about. Here it is.
And the big controversy last time I did it was a Caitlyn Jenner joke, right? Oh, outrage on Twitter the next day. And by outrage, I mean a couple of people going, it was transphobic. It wasn't transphobic in the slightest. It was a joke about a trans person, but the joke had nothing to do with that aspect of her existence. And that's the other thing about offence. People get offended when they mistake the subject of a joke with the actual target, and they're not necessarily the same. I'll tell you the joke. You make your own minds up. Right. So. It's live, so they go, and now your host for the 68th Annual Golden Globe Awards. Please welcome Ricky Gervais. They come on, and they're all clapping. All the actors are looking up, smiling at me nervously. It's brilliant, right? So I just go, relax. I'm going to be nice tonight. I've changed. Not as much as Bruce Jenner. And I go, now Caitlyn Jenner, of course. And what a year she's had. Became a role model for trans people everywhere. Bravely breaking down barriers and destroying stereotypes. She didn't do a lot for women drivers. So...
I mean, you know, again, that's not a joke about that whether she's trans or not. That's a joke about her running over someone and killing them.
Right. Do we have another part? But do we have another part of that, or did we leave it alone? Because he gets dicey. Yeah, because he says in this, he's like, let's remember that the joke here is about a celebrity that killed a person and then went home and put a dress on. I mean, that's his joke.
Mm-hmm.
And it's. You know, it had nothing to do with him or her being transgendered and when that happened. And he explains, how do we even talk to each other? If I can't, because you're not supposed to, what did he call it? Name, date them. I can't remember what it was, but you no longer can even say that they used to be a man. You cannot say that. That is offensive. To people like Caitlyn Jenner, that you can't. And he's like, how can I possibly? He's like, we all saw him at one point. He was a pole vaulter. That was him. He made the choice and made the change. But now we have to pretend that his life didn't happen as a him. Now that he's a her. That's insane.
Yeah. And I don't even think actually Caitlyn Jenner is offended by that.
I don't think so either.
It's the people who are arguing on Caitlyn Jenner's behalf.
Yeah.
You know, they're allowed to get outraged on her behalf.
And that's the thing. We have to stop worrying about, you know, there was a story came out a couple of days ago that Facebook interaction is down 23%. Now, why is that happening, Stu? What's the common reason for that? That all the experts are, you know, all the TV people are saying.
I don't know. I mean,
okay. I haven't been following it.
No. Well, there's the theory of the algorithm changing.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So the algorithm has changed, and they're saying, you know, that you know, that's just changing. That's just changing people's participation. Well, is it? It might be. It might be. The algorithm changes a lot of stuff. However, is it possible that any part of that 23% is people just saying, I don't want to be on this anymore. I'm not going to react to it anymore. I'm just not going to answer all of this. I'm not going to get into it. I might post my things for my family, or as I post things that I'm interested in, but I don't interact like I used to, because it's just vile. It's just vile. I don't interact with Twitter. I might tweet some stuff out, but I don't necessarily interact with it. Occasionally, if I'm in a mood, if I'm like, you know what, I really need to get some hostility out.
Right.
You know,
but that's what everyone's doing all the time,
right?
Which is why it's not fun.
Correct.
No, I think that's true. I think it's a, I think there's part of, at least I'd like to believe it's true. How about that instead? Let me rework it to I'd like to believe it's true, because I think there is a thing going on where, you know, like I grew up, you know, a product of the 80s, generally speaking. You know, times have been easy. My life's been easy. I mean, I look back at and you know, others, we look at history all the time. There have been eras of this freaking society that have sucked.
Oh, my God.
I mean, really hard to live, hard to survive, hard to get through the day, terrible things happening. There have been eras of this country, and certainly around the globe and still are, that are really, like, challenging to your daily existence. And your entire life was difficult. I feel like there's some human need to find that conflict, to find that.
Can we calm down on it a bit, though? Because, you know,
I don't need it.
Most kids have shoes now.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I was like,
kids have, you know, I saw something. What was it I was watching? I was watching some documentary, and it was on America and the West in 1890, I think. Oh my gosh, the abject poverty and the way people were treating each other, and life was so expendable, and it was just, it was you were cold, you were wet, you were hungry, life was brutal, then you died.
Oh my God. I mean, we have Steven Pinker coming on, I think, next week. He's an author.
He's great.
One of his previous books was called Angels of Our Better Nature.
Yeah.
And it's a great book.
You got to get past the...
He's not a big fan of religion. So
no, in fact, he's like on issues. He needs some therapy on the religion thing.
But he's describing the eras,
yes,
that we've had before these, and they're so impossibly dark, that violence was a real part of everyone's life,
yeah,
on a daily basis. And yes, look, we're talking about what happened in Florida. And is that a part of our life? Yes. However, the violence rates are so much lower. And the idea that something like this could happen, it's much more of an outlier than it used to be. It kind of goes
to this. If I was living in other parts of the world, if I was living in Africa, Pirates of the Caribbean would not be funny, because they're real,
yeah,
and they come and they rape you, and yeah, they kill all of your family. So it's not funny. You're not going to find in Yemen,
Somalia,
a new Somalia, a new Disney theme park where, look, we've got Pirates of Somalia.
I would be selling my Disney stock right away if they made that decision.
It's not happening,
right?
Okay, because it's real. We have gotten to a point to where that stuff isn't real anymore. That's how much progress we've made. It's not real.
That's great.
Right.
And I feel like we tend to substitute that human, you know, moment of where the hell's my next meal coming from? Oh my God, am I going to get stabbed tomorrow? And we just try to find it in this like online outrage cycle.
I don't know if we try to find it, or it's just because you're not trying to find it when you are. Now, think of this, you know, Federal Express, you know, couldn't get funding because you didn't need it tomorrow. But you have an internet problem that slows you down and you can't load a page in, what, 10 seconds? You're pissed. You're like, what the hell is wrong with my internet? Dude, we've got a problem. We've got a real problem. Chill out. Simply Safe, the home security company that a few years ago started out with 10 employees. They are now the fastest growing home security company in the nation, protecting over 2 million people. And they've just released their brand new home security system. It's the all new Simply Safe. It's a lot smaller. It's been completely redesigned and rebuilt. They've added safeguards to protect against power outages and down Wi-Fi and everything else. It's been redesigned to be practically invisible. It's very, very small, but it's also smarter. It is going to sound the alarm for you and your family so you are safe, and it's going to call police so they get there, or fire. So they get there. It's going to take a picture of what happened and who was there. And it's I believe it's high definition. So it's not one of those fuzzy things like, I think he had a face. I was pretty sure he had a face. And it's still at the same fair and honest price. 24/7 protection for only $15 a month. No contract. Smaller, faster, stronger than anything they built before. And supply is limited. So you got to go now to simplysafebeck.com. Stop paying for the high bills, having somebody come in and do a bunch of wiring on your house. This is the smarter way to do it. SimplySafeBeck.com. Completely wireless and strings free, no contracts. SimplySafeBeck.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
Glenn Beck.
We have an interview with Larry Kudlow tonight at 5 o'clock. You don't want to miss. Now, Larry is, I mean, I think this is a great exchange. There's some upgrades that I think are happening in the Trump administration. Going from Cohn to Kudlow, I'll take that trade any day of the week.
Yeah, especially after, you know, seemingly the reason Cohn was leaving was because of tariffs. I could give you the...
Line. This is what, a few days ago.
Yeah. When we impose sanctions on U.S. enemies like North Korea, Russia, and Iran, we want them to feel the economic pain of being deprived of imports. But now we are imposing sanctions on our own country, putting up tariffs supposedly to make Americans more prosperous. If there ever was a crisis of logic, this is it. That's from Larry Kudlow. From March 3rd, 2018. It is what, March 13th today?
He said that he got a phone call. He expected the president to be reaming him. And instead, he said, I talked to him for 10 minutes. He explained what he was doing, and I'm in. I'm fully in.
Yeah, Cohn to Kudlow is a great move.
That's an
upgrade.
Great move. So we'll...
And I think Tillerson to Pompeo is an upgrade.
It is. H.R. McMaster to John Bolton is a good move, but it's starting to get a little scary on the guys who, they get it. They absolutely get it. But I want to make sure that we
and that one hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, we're not moving towards war. We'll have more on this in coming up.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
Okay, I'm going to tell you, you know, a story that you might have read on social media, and then I'm going to tell you the truth about it. Okay, so if you read it on social media, here's what you heard. This week, a polite, slightly awkward 19-year-old from Oklahoma graced our television sets. Millions of homes were cheering for him. He had his acoustic guitar in hand. His name is Benjamin Glaze. He was ready to show the American Idol judges that he could do it. He could do it. What he could do with his talent would amaze America. But before he could even start his song, one of the judges asked him a personal question. It was country singer Luke Bryan. Asked Ben if he'd ever kissed a girl, and Ben explained innocently enough, "Well, gosh, Mr. Bryan, no, I've never been in a relationship, and I can't kiss a girl without being in a relationship." And then Katy Perry, the most high-profile judge on this season of American Idol, immediately asked Ben to approach the judges' table. She stuck her face toward him and teasingly requested one on the cheek. Well, everybody could tell that Ben was embarrassed. But what can you do? It's television. Katy Perry asked you to kiss her on the cheek. National television. He didn't want to be impolite, so he begrudgingly gave her a peck. But Katy wasn't satisfied that animal. So she asked for another, but this time Katy tricked the lanky, some might call him just sweetly naive teenager, and kissed him on the mouth. She raised her arms in victory, and everyone laughed. Ben laughed too, in a feeble effort to play along. Ben later told the New York Times that he wanted to save that kiss for his first relationship. He said, "I know a lot of guys would say, heck yeah, but I was raised in a conservative family and I was uncomfortable immediately. I wanted that first kiss to be special." What a beautiful message from an unexpected place, but Hollywood just won't stop. Okay, so now that's the story that I read online. And then I went back because I thought, how is Disney of all people, ABC Disney, doing this in the hashtag Me Too world? They're now having this happen? How is that working? How about he didn't want to kiss? And then the video started and I watched. Okay, all right. Before you get outraged, this is a complete and total stunt. He may never have kissed a girl. He may be that gosh darn kind of guy, but this was totally set up. You can see it from the get-go in the video. It is absolutely scripted, and it's more fake than the fake pirate auction of women in Pirates of the Caribbean. It just is. And you know what, Disney? We're tired of being played for, you know, we're tired of being the rube. We're tired of being, you know, looked down on and mocked and just treated like we're stupid. We're not that stupid. In a time in the world when there are actual things that are really frightening that are going on, in a time in the world where we are being taught that there is no objective reality, no truth, no objective morals at all, the American people are starving for something that is true and authentic and real. Here's an idea. Why doesn't somebody in Hollywood or in the media actually start to give us that?
It's Thursday, March 15th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
We are thrilled to have in the studio with us Joel Rosenberg, friend of the program for many, many years. How are you doing, Joel?
I'm doing well. Good to see you, Glenn.
Good to see you. Now, Joel, you are
speaking of truthful. We're going right to a novelist.
Yes. Yeah.
So we need
but
truth.
But you know what? Explain who you used to be before you were a novelist.
Well, I'm a failed political consultant. Everyone I worked for lost in Washington. Right. Helped Steve Forbes lose two presidential campaigns. Right. Was on Bibi Netanyahu's comeback campaign in 2000. It took him 9 more years to come back. Right. But anyway.
So you've been around on the losing team.
That's true.
So to give you some credibility, exactly. You have done that. Okay.
I tried.
But you're a guy who has passionately cared about the issues, and you've been around, the people in the know, seen the things, but from being around some of those
people.
That's
true. That's true. I learned a lot from them, and they may not have benefited from me, but I benefited from them a lot.
Correct. And so you've been studying mainly the Middle East, people would say, I think. People would say, you know, he's mainly a guy who writes about the Middle East and is really studied that. I think I know you better. That you would include Russia in all of your studies of the Middle East because of the Gog and Magog connection, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, certainly there's a prophetic angle to Russia and something I've been fascinated with. Russia has had a hand in meddling and causing destabilization in the Middle East for the last century. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to be interested in the Middle East, I live in Jerusalem. I'm a U.S. Israeli citizen. Mm-hmm. By the way, that means I get to vote twice. It's like living in Chicago, so that's nice. But Russia is going to be a player anywhere, but particularly in the Middle East. But also my family, Glenn, on my father's side is Jewish, Gentile on my mom's side. I'm an evangelical. But my dad's side were Orthodox Jews that escaped out of Russia under Tsar Nicholas II. Mm. So part in our heritage, our history, our DNA, we have always had a deep concern about evil rising in Russia and what it can do when the world doesn't see it coming.
So your book, it's called The Kremlin Conspiracy. And I have to tell you, I know you started, how long ago did you start writing this? A year and a half, two?
I started writing it 2 years ago, researching a little bit before, yeah.
Okay, so 2 years ago you started writing it. It is as if you wrote it literally this week. I mean, yeah, it does. It's amazing.
We talk about my novels. From the time you and I first met on CNN, then Fox, now here, you've been saying, well, these are like ripped from tomorrow's headlines and like today's headlines now. Yeah.
This one is remarkable. Quickly explain the premise of the novel, and then I want to kind of get into the nuts and bolts of what's really happening and how it plays out in the book.
So in the Kremlin Conspiracy, it's the first political series story of a new series. Alexander Luganov is the czar, the dictator rising in Russia. He's not Putin, but let's call him Putin-esque.
Well, let's say it's one of those movies where they make it an extra bold type that says, this is fictional characters, right. But you look at it and you're like, probably, but there's a lot of Putin.
There's a lot of Putin.
Yeah.
That's true. So, and I'll explain why in a moment. But all right, so you got Luganov. He's rising in Russia. We see him from two different angles. His son-in-law, Oleg Kraskin, actually marries into the family early in the book. And now he's not only a family member in this godfather-like family, but he is hired as a senior aide to Luganov. So we have inside access, in a sense, into the Kremlin inner circle through the eyes of this young lawyer who's a bit young, naive. He's sharp, but he doesn't understand what he's getting himself into.
Mm-hmm.
We're toggling back and forth through the Kremlin conspiracy with an American, Marcus Riker, who after 9/11 joins the Marines, gets sent to Afghanistan, ends up joining the United States Secret Service. And through a series of tragedies I won't talk about, I don't want to give too much away, he finds himself in Moscow, and Oleg and Marcus's lives converge at the most dangerous moment in U.S.-Russian relations. Big picture, what's happening with Luganov is he's got a new president in Washington, not well-versed in foreign and national security policy. The president's eyes are on North Korea and Iran, understandably so.
Mm-hmm.
But Luganov decides to take a gamble. While the world is focused on Asia and the Middle East, he decides to go grab one, two, or all three of the Baltic states, the NATO allies right on the border of Russia, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. He figures with 100,000 troops, a lightning fast strike, he could grab one, two, or maybe all three in 96 hours. Now, you say, that's insane. Why would a Russian leader, even in fiction, go grab a NATO ally that's covered and protected by Article 5, the Mutual Defense Pact, which says if one country's attacked in NATO, everybody comes to its defense.
I know the answer. I think I know the answer. Okay. Even before I read the book, I can tell you the answer. Nobody wants nuclear war with Russia.
Right, right. And so Luganov's gamble is, nobody's going to stop me. If I actually grab it and hold even one of them, is the United States of America, is NATO going to actually go to even conventional war with me, and are they going to risk nuclear war with Russia over a country most Americans cannot find on a map? And his theory is no, and he thinks if the answer really is no, if NATO does not defend NATO, that's the end of NATO. In 96 hours, I can collapse the entire Western alliance because they won't do it. That's the theory of the novel,
so,
Kremlin Conspiracy.
So now let me tell you the reality. So Putin, who has nothing to do with this book, has been trying to collapse.
I haven't been poisoned yet. That's a starter.
But I know.
We're just getting started.
Has said that he is wanting to collapse the NATO alliance and wants to collapse the Western world, and has just last week poisoned with a nerve gas that is clearly from Russia. It's only made in Russia. It's only kept in Russia. 21 people who are going to be vegetables for the rest of their life if they live. There is no cure from this nerve agent. It is a nasty, nasty nerve agent. He's called on the carpet. Theresa May says, well, you better answer or there's going to be, you know, something that's going to happen. She pulls out. Putin mocks her. The foreign ministry mocks it. The London embassy, the Russian embassy, issues joke photos in response. Does not take it seriously at all. It's almost as if Putin is giving us one real push to see, will they actually do anything? And the answer is no, we won't.
Well, they're not going to the World Cup, so that's something.
Yeah,
I mean, the royal family isn't.
Yeah,
but,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But they didn't say that.
Like, right. The team might go, but
the team might go.
The team might go, but the royal family will not go.
Right. The way NATO needs to handle this is finally getting serious with sanctions. You have to target specific individuals in the Kremlin, and you have to go after the money. This is not something you would go to war over, but
yes,
it's definitely something you've got to hit them where they count. And you know, one of the things I do in this book, one of the things that fiction can do is take people outside of the day-to-day tactical headlines and sort of separate out whatever you feel about a specific leader at a specific moment. So by making this fiction, by not calling him Putin, by creating him Putin-esque with a lot of details, but then getting to play with it a bit, extrapolate
yes.
It allows you to cause people to lose themselves in reality for a moment and go into this fictional world. And in this world, Luganov is a czar. Now, my family literally physically escaped from the Tsar, Nicholas II. But what are the Tsars? This is, you know, Putin is not a communist.
Mm-hmm.
He's not an ideologue in the communist pure sense. Mm-hmm. We may want to talk about where he's coming from ideologically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But part of it is he's a monarchist. He believes that Russia has been humiliated by the collapse of the Soviet Union and that they need to rebuild the glory of Mother Russia. This is deep in his psyche. So Luganov is this person. He's a rising czar, which means he wants to expand the borders. Doesn't mean he's going to grab and control every country, but he wants to knuckle them under his thumb. He's also a godfather. He is a mafia boss, but he's not Sonny Corleone. He's not a rash, hot-headed, impulsive thug. He is Michael Corleone. He's a cold, calculated killer.
So we're going to take from the fiction and see what we're supposed to learn on what we can do to stop the actual Michael Corleone, who is currently in the Kremlin, when we come back.
The book is The Kremlin Conspiracy. Joel C. Rosenberg is with us, and we have more on a very timely book coming up in just a minute.
With volatility in the stock market, wild swings in Bitcoin, the constant turmoil in Washington, gold has come off its best year since 2010. Gold is really an insurance policy. I don't buy gold as an investment. Gold is a safe haven. It has been for centuries, and it performs well in times of volatility and chaos. No good thing no chaos is happening around the world today. If you've done well in speculating in cryptocurrency or in the extended rise of the stock market, have you considered reviewing your portfolio, pulling some of those gains off, and then hedging your bet with gold? It's not an all-in strategy. It's just there to help you spread the risk out. As things go down, gold goes up. And as a reminder, Goldline is under new ownership with better pricing and the same great service. So it's a great time to be thinking about adding to your IRA. From now until the end of the month, Goldline offering $750 in free coins when you purchase $25,000 or more using their industry-leading Express IRA program. So call them now, 866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So we're with Joel Rosenberg. He is the author of a new novel called The Kremlin Conspiracy. And if you want to be able to, as he just said a few minutes ago, kind of see the world, but not have to worry about the world. It's a novel, but it really is dealing exactly with much of what we're dealing with right now with Russia. And you can try to understand the figures and how everybody is being played and what a great chess player Putin is. He's many moves ahead, I think, of all of us. Is there anybody, Joel, out there that you think is like that really gets Putin besides, I think, probably Bibi Netanyahu?
No. I mean, not in the position of a president or a prime minister. There's a lot of, you know, experts to get him, but... No, there's no, and No, we've got a lot of Churchills who are out of office or they're backbenchers who are seeing him. I mean, the guy who gets them best, Garry Kasparov, Bill Browder, guys who've been directly threatened by him, yes. but have taken him on face to face. But they are working on a campaign that I think they are the Churchills of our time.
Yeah.
Actually, those two men. And I think their tribe is beginning to increase. In other words, they are, you know, that, what I'm doing is taking a different route. They are going straight policy speeches because they're experts on these things. And they know Putin face to face. But one of the things that has to happen is sometimes you have to drive things out of Washington, out of Brussels, out of the political sphere, and into the popular culture so that it helps people understand evil that's rising. That we've almost as long as I've known you, we've talked about the central theme to all of my novels, even though they all have different characters, different flavors. But the theme is this: to misunderstand the nature and threat of evil is to risk getting blindsided by it. We were blindsided at 9/11. We were blindsided at Pearl Harbor. We were blindsided by the rise of Hitler and the Second World War and the Holocaust. We shouldn't have been. We all look back and go, there's a lot of data, but we weren't paying attention to it because we didn't understand the nature and threat of evil. And a lot of Western society poo-poos and discounts the concept that evil even exists. So it's hard to see it if you don't even believe it's there.
There's also a something in human nature that makes us want to say, no, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. I you know, because we can't imagine it.
Right.
And in this particular case, we don't know what to do because none of us want nuclear war. We don't want a war
with
Russia.
Well, this is an example where, you know, okay, so the political thriller, the Kremlin conspiracy, lays out one of the worst case scenarios. Literally in 96 hours, a Russian leader could collapse the NATO alliance. I think that's, when I started working on it 2 years ago, I thought, all right, well, that's a little out there, but it's a good novel.
No,
but
it
now,
could
it you know, it could happen next week.
Yeah.
But here's the one way we could stop it. President Trump and NATO could significantly scale up the deterrent forces in the Baltics to create a speed bump high enough that whatever temptation is there is mitigated and Putin backs off, looks for another victim.
And he will say, if we do that, he will say, look at the aggression of the West.
So what? I mean, it's better than them being invaded.
Does anybody have the courage to do that? And I mean, when I say that, I mean the American people. I mean, I want to go through some stats that you know, you've looked at when you were writing this book about how America views Putin, views Russia, and I'm not sure we're all on the same page about him. We'll get to that here in just a second. The name of the book is The Kremlin Conspiracy by Joel Rosenberg. He is I don't know how many books have you written?
This is the 13th political thriller.
And they are all riveting. And as he said earlier, always like rip from tomorrow's headlines. This one literally could be, I mean, it's like he wrote it last night. It really is. The Kremlin Conspiracy, available in bookstores now. Back in just a second.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So Joel Rosenberg is with us. He's written a book called The Kremlin Conspiracy. And Joel, I think the Kremlin has done a brilliant job of making Russia and Putin in America all about Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And so the Clinton people, when you're talking about, you know, was there something funny going on with Gazprom? Yeah, there was. I'm sorry. But the Uranium One, that's a problem.
That's a problem.
I don't know if she was involved, but there's a mountain of evidence that was held back that even Congress couldn't see, that shows that they were in bribing and doing all kinds of stuff for people all around Washington, on both sides. Here with the election, people are making it all about Donald Trump. I haven't seen the evidence that there's collusion. There are weird things, but he's putting people in place that are not. Pompeo is not a fan of Russia.
No, I mean, no, that's the thing. If President Trump were criminally colluding with Putin, you would not put Jim Mattis at the defense.
Why not?
The guy with the supreme allied commander of NATO. Why? Like, this is a guy who gets Russia, right. Is serious about the NATO alliance. Mike Pompeo at CIA, I've known him for years. He's a fan of my books. Not the why I'm a fan of him, but he's got good sense. Mike Pence at obviously the VP, Nikki Haley. These are not pushovers on Putin. So moreover, to President Trump's credit, he is driving up U.S. defense spending when defense was hollowed out under Obama. He is pushing NATO to spend much more money for themselves on their own defense, and they're starting to do it. He's arming Ukraine with lethal weapons. President Obama never did it. Mm-hmm. His U.S. Special Forces took out a team of Russian mercenaries trying to give us a bloody nose in Syria and kicked their tails.
Yeah.
That was fantastic. Listen, so none of these are soft on Putin policies. But I have to say, my concern is that President Trump is radio silent on President Putin. No matter what Putin does that's evil, bad, nefarious, aggressive, President Trump doesn't seem to have the desire, the willingness to call him out on it. And President Trump isn't radio silent on anybody that he doesn't like. I'm guessing you've taken a few, just, you know, spitballing here. Yeah. I live in Jerusalem now, so I'm not totally up to speed, but... Right. You know, President's tougher on Jeff Sessions than he is on the worst dictator on the planet.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean he's criminally corrupt, but it just means that's weird.
Yeah.
And Vladimir Lenin.
But here's the problem. If we go to, if we look at the public, I'm not sure, because I think in many ways, Putin and then just the political machine has made this about Hillary Clinton didn't do anything wrong. Donald Trump didn't do anything wrong. And so we're not actually talking about who did do something wrong. And that's Vladimir Putin in Russia.
Right. Two thoughts, though, on that. One, this is the responsibility of the president of the United States to define the terms of the debate. And this is why radio silence is not just bad. It's actually harmful, because you can define. Look, contrast what President Trump is doing with Russia, which is good policy, but no defining of the debate. Compare it with his North Korea policy. He defines Kim Jong-un as Rocket Man. He sends B-2 bombers over the peninsula.
Right.
He sends Pence to go to the DMZ. He sends Mattis. He sends the aircraft carrier task force.
Yeah.
And we don't know where it will go, but it has gotten North Korea's attention, because it's this strategic pressure, this maximum pressure. We are not getting maximum pressure on Russia, and we need to. So that's one point. The president needs to do it. The second point is to keep in mind what Vladimir Lenin used to say. He would say, probe with bayonets. If you find mush, push. If you find steel, stop. Under Obama, Vladimir Putin found mush, and he kept pushing, and nobody stopped him. What we need President Trump to do is to show steel. He is showing it in policy, although there's a few other things we could talk about that I think he should be doing. But he is not defining the terms of the debate, even at the moment this week where NATO is starting to say, and they're not sure what to do, but they, we go back to this point about Russian nerve gas, military grade nerve agents poisoning people in Great Britain. This is we've never seen this happen since World War II. So this is a time when the President of the United States stands with your British allies, your NATO allies, and speaks out and begins to define the terms. Now, one last thought on that. This is a very good development of the idea of Mike Pompeo moving over to state.
I think it was a great move.
It is. One, because Tillerson is an honorable man, didn't understand the job, and didn't really know the president. So you never believed that he was really speaking for the president. Moreover, he had a personal friendship with Vladimir Putin. He got the highest civilian honor that you could possibly get from Vladimir Putin. That did not give me a a sense that this guy had steel when it came to Putin.
Right.
Like, would you ever take a...
No.
You know, neither would I.
No.
Now, maybe if I was running ExxonMobil, but I'm not. Pompeo gets Russia and Iran and North Korea. But also, there's the key. Mike Pompeo, for all his skill sets, he did not have the legal ability at CIA to shape policy. CIA directors are not allowed to say, and therefore you should, Mr. President. Can't do it. It's only analysis and data, which is, that's the right thing. At state, he can craft a robust, comprehensive Russia policy, help the president, if the president is willing to be helped in that direction. But it's time.
Let me go through some of the stats. With the Russian invasion of Georgia, Ukraine in recent years, Russian forces fighting in Syria to protect the regime of Assad, Russia continuing to sell arms and nuclear technology to Iran, Russia hacking the U.S. computer networks and attempts to interfere in American elections. Would you agree or disagree with this sentence? I have come to believe that Vladimir Putin and the government of Russia pose a clear and present danger to national security in the United States, NATO allies, Europe, and our Middle East allies, such as Israel. 72% believe that's true. 60% say they worry about Putin now planning another military attack, perhaps an invasion of a small NATO country or Middle Eastern country, because he thinks the international community isn't serious about stopping him. And 51%, 51.9, are not convinced the president understands Russia or Putin and must do more. What's that tell you?
Well, we commissioned this poll for the release of the Kremlin conspiracy last week, and we did that from a highly respected pollster, John McLaughlin. I've known him for 25 years. John has also been one of the president's pollsters. And I said, okay, this is going to be important because if the president's going to, I want to know what Americans really think. I want it to be fair. I want it to be scientifically accurate, but it also has to be done by somebody who the president wouldn't listen to. Like, these are real numbers. They're not, mm-hmm. you know, some CNN. Leftist, you know, right, exactly. So I briefed the White House staff on these numbers and congressional leaders on these numbers. And it's important for these numbers to get out. Because as we head into the 2018 elections, if 3 out of 4 Americans think that Putin is a clear and present danger, but 52% don't think the president fully understands that threat or is doing all that he can, that's a real problem. Because what do Americans agree on 3 out of 4 Americans on anything these days?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying that means that it's their front and center issue, but I think instinctually, They get this issue, but they want to see leadership. And it's actually kind of crazy to hear Democrats being able to attack a Republican president for being soft.
It's crazy.
On Vladimir Putin. But at this point, at least in terms of rhetoric, that charge holds.
So we're talking to Joel Rosenberg, the Kremlin conspiracy. What should...
Novel. That, just to be clear, I'm not actually involved in a Kremlin conspiracy.
Right.
For the record, right, I would like... And in fact, when I was in Vice President Pence's office a few months ago, and he said, what's your next novel about? I said, well, I don't really want to mention it in the West Wing. He said, why? What are you talking about? Said, it has nothing to do with what's going on here. And Pence pressed me, what's the title? I said, sir, it's the Kremlin conspiracy. I've known Mike Pence for a long time. I got to say, I've never seen him laugh quite as hard as he did when he heard the name of the novel.
So the Kremlin conspiracy, the novel, can you give us what you think we should be doing at this time with Theresa May? What should we be doing? How can we show steel without, you know, pushing us closer to the edge of a war with Russia?
Yeah. If I were advising the President of the United States, I would advise him to immediately call her, invite her to Washington. I would do a joint statement together. I might not even just ask her. I would ask the head of NATO to come, or I'd get on a plane. I'd go to London or Brussels. I would start moving. I would not even announce it. I would just start moving U.S. forces, tanks into the Baltic states, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania. The president is going to have a summit on April 3rd with the 3 presidents of the Baltic states. They are terrified. The Lithuanian ambassador actually heard about the book and invited me to breakfast. I didn't know him, to talk about these things, to get a copy and talk about what can be done. You have, and then I would start imposing the very sanctions that Congress overwhelmingly passed last year and the President Trump has not yet imposed.
That is one
Only
thing
two senators voted against it. Over 400 congressmen voted for it. He's got the legal authority. It's time. Move. You've got all the setup. You've given Putin all the space. If he wanted change, he would have changed by now. Start to hit Putin where they care about, which is targeted sanctions on individuals, use the Magnitsky Act, the act that specifically goes after people that are engaged in criminal activity. You don't have to, there's a way to ramp this thing up. You don't want to overreach, but you've got to start protecting our allies and hitting specific Putin cronies.
Do you believe that, I mean, Putin's election is on Sunday?
Yes, I'm not holding my breath. I don't think it'll be a Pennsylvania 18.
I don't think so.
I'm just spitballing here.
Right. But, you know, some of this, I think, is happening because of his election on Sunday. Do you agree with that or not?
I don't. And the reason I don't is because when you're a dictator, you know, I mean, yeah, he'd love to win with 95. The danger is if he thinks he wins with 60, that would tell you that 40% of the country is voting for somebody. They don't care who it is, just not him. Mm-hmm. I think that's a risk to him. But since you're not really worried as Vladimir Putin over if you're going to win or not, what are you doing? I think we would be misreading him, saber-rattling, as just being political. I think he means it. I think he is a thug who's looking for another country to take.
So 30 to 45 seconds. Do you see war as a real possibility with Russia?
If we show weakness. I mean, if we can't show steel with a country that's actually a weak country. They have nuclear weapons, but this guy is a bully, and we're the world's superpower. We've got NATO. We just need to show steel. This is the darkest hour with Winston Churchill. Under Neville Chamberlain, not good. With Winston Churchill and FDR kicking in, there's a lot we can do to stop evil in this world, but the West gets blindsided when we don't pay attention and we don't stand up for ourselves.
Thanks, Joel. Appreciate it.
The book is The Kremlin Conspiracy from Joel Rosenberg. You can get him on Twitter at Joel C. Rosenberg or go to his website, joelrosenberg.com.
You've heard me talk for a while now about Blinds.com. It's for a couple of reasons. They're the best at what they do. They have the best customer service. Their prices are unbelievable. They have this system down. Many people in this audience, thousands of people in this audience, have taken my suggestion. Mark in Arizona said, I heard about Blinds.com through Glenn Beck. I called them, quick delivery. Installation was a breeze. They ordered fantastic. They looked fantastic. And so I ordered more 2 weeks later. Blinds.com has the perfect blind shade, shutters, or drapes to upgrade your home for less than almost any other home improvement. Find out yourself why over 20 million Americans have trusted Blinds.com. Trust them to upgrade your home. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings. Save big on their custom blinds for your home. Now, they have an anniversary sale now through March 22nd. When you buy one, you get one 50% off at Blinds.com/back. Buy one, get 50% off at Blinds.com/back. That's Blinds.com/back. Rules and restrictions do apply.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Have to play something great from Ben Shapiro, good friend, and just the future of the conservative movement. Here's Ben Shapiro about how the left and the media were using these kids in the walkout yesterday.
The media has put forward this message, and they've been doing this for years, but it's really, I think, accelerated in the last few months, and particularly in the last few weeks. They've been putting forward this message that if you disagree with them on gun control, then this means you don't care enough about the kids. And now they are activating these kids and putting them out on the front lines and putting them in photo ops so that they can essentially use them as political human shields. Now, listen, the kids can say whatever they want. That's their prerogative, obviously.
Yeah.
But it is the media that are choosing to elevate these kids as moral authorities, even though tragedy and age don't confer any sort of expertise on a given issue.
It's a good point. And also, by the way, age is, it's the opposite. The closer you are to birth, usually the less information you have. That's kind of the way it works.
No, I've had serious conferences with infants.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. When I have my yearly toddler conference, It is. I got to get them all juice box. They demand to have in juicy juice. Okay.
It's really good.
But they sit around and some of the ideas that come out of these toddlers, I mean, out of the mouth of babes, dude. You've never heard that?
I have heard that. Yeah, well, didn't know it really meant.
You think gun policy? Yeah. Oh, you ageist.
The nuances of the Second Amendment debate out of the mouths of babes. That's what we expect from them all the time. Isn't that phrase supposed to design someone saying something inappropriate and ill-informed of all the circumstances? It really kind of does apply to this. I mean, you know, look, you could, as he said, you say whatever you want, but stop treating them as if they have some insight on the debate here. They don't. They were the victims of something terrible. That doesn't make you an expert.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
So who is the next contestant on Survivor Island? The White House has selected Larry Kudlow. This is a great upgrade. Larry becomes the top economic advisor for Donald Trump as director of the National Economic Council. He replaces Gary Cohn, who decided to step down specifically because he didn't agree with Trump's new tariff policy. So now, I mean, if that's true, why would you go with Larry Kudlow? Because Kudlow is locked, cocked, and ready to go, you know, and he's going to be laying down those serious tariffs? Not Larry Kudlow. Let me just play a little bit of audio of what Larry Kudlow thinks about the new trade policies in his own words 2 weeks ago. Listen.
Oh, it won't unwind it, but it's a bad omen. You know, he's so good on taxes. He's so good on tax cuts. He's so good on deregulation, infrastructure. I even like him on immigration. He's never been good on trade.
Okay, so wait a minute. So you fire a guy. Now, this is what we'd have you believe. You'd fire a guy who stood up against your tariffs because you're just going to go crazy and you're going to replace him with a guy who says, quote, it's a bad omen and the president is always bad on trade. Why do I have the feeling that either this is the shortest stay on Survivor Island or maybe perhaps there's something else going on, and perhaps, and I haven't believed this before, but perhaps the president is sly like a fox. According to Kudlow, he was playing tennis, and he had just come out and said those things on CNBC and much more. And so he was playing tennis. And somebody brought him the phone. It was probably one that was still wired. Sir, excuse me. Lawrence, the president would like to speak to you on the telephone. So he picks up the phone and he's expecting Trump to yell at him. He said he thought he was going to, you know, brawl with the president over his criticism of the harsh tariffs. In actuality, Kudlow said Trump instead spent the entire call explaining his strategy. And by the end of the call, Kudlow said, I'm in. 48 hours later, Trump officially offered him the job, and he said, I accepted immediately. So now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Either Trump is some sort of voodoo magician, which tonight on Anderson Cooper, is Donald Trump a voodoo magician? And he can cast these agreeability spells on Kudlow over the phone, or there's something we don't know here, because the president's new economic advisor is clearly not a fan of tariffs or the way Trump views trade in general, but he is comfortable and confident in joining the administration. tonight at 5 o'clock on the blaze.com/TV, we have a conversation with Larry Kudlow. You need to hear who he is. This is a serious upgrade. We do know this. Ever since the tariff policy was announced, the rhetoric has shifted from the idea of blanket tariffs to who's going to be excluded. So far, Mexico and Canada have already been excluded. Canada is our number one supplier of steel. Mexico is number four. So that's 25% of the steel imports, which overshadows both Brazil and South Korea combined. Their numbers two and three importers of steel. And they've also been told that various members of the EU may be excluded. The only nation in the top 10 that we import steel from is the EU. From the EU is Germany. Does that mean that Germany is going to be excluded as well? And if so, who is left to put a tariff on? It makes you wonder, did that call between Trump and his new economic advisor actually go a little something like, hey, Lawrence, it's Donald. Don't worry about the tariff thing. I'm playing chess. Let's hope that's the case. Otherwise, we'll see you next time on Survivor.
It's Thursday, March 15th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
I have tremendous respect for Larry Kudlow. I mean, he's the man when it comes to free trade.
There's a real reason for optimism here. It's a, you know, I because I'm a big free trade guy, was nervous about Cohn leaving. Cohn is not exactly where I am on many issues, but he's pretty good on trade, where, you know, the president has indicated he, is a protectionist in many ways. And Kudlow is the exact opposite. I mean, you know, Larry Kudlow, Stephen Moore, and Art Laffer wrote a piece together for National Review on March 3rd of this year.
Stephen Moore did?
Yeah. Stephen Moore. Are you thinking he's not the person? Are you thinking of someone else potentially?
No, I'm thinking Stephen Moore is a guy who said just a year ago, look, nationalism is the deal and I don't agree with it, but it's where the people are, so let's go.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, I disagree with that comment as well, but I mean, Stephen Moore has a very long record. That's why it was a shocking comment.
Correct.
Because he has an incredibly long record of
correct. I'm glad to see him
supportive of free trade.
Yeah.
Here's a couple things from that article. One of the ironies of trade protectionism is that tariffs and import quotas are what we do to ourselves in times of peace and what foreign nations do to us with blockades to keep imports from entering our country in times of war. Tariffs are really taxes. Since so many of the things American consumers buy today are made of steel or aluminum, a 25% tariff on these commodities may get passed on to consumers. This is a regressive tax on low-income families. Now, this guy is been elevated to a real position of influence inside the White House. That's a really good thing.
Do you ever feel like, man, I wish the president would let me like him? You know what I mean? I wish he would just stop tweeting, stop being a punk to everybody, start being the president of the United States so I could show, you know, hey, this is the way a leader behaves, you know, and stop doing all of the stuff that's meaningless but hurts the culture. Because he's so good. I mean, this week I'm like, or last week, I was like, oh, geez, man, here we go. He's going to do the trade thing. He might do the gun thing. He's reversed himself on the gun thing. And I don't think this is him being talked out of tariffs, strangely.
I would be very surprised if it is.
Yeah, but I mean, he's got Larry Kudlow. And if Larry is, I have no reason not to believe him. If Larry is like, look, I talked to him a few minutes. I thought he was going to yell at me. And then he said, no, don't. Here's my strategy.
Look, Kudlow, you know, was involved in the tax plan from Trump. He's a good free market voice. And the fact that another free market voice is going to be around the president who doesn't always have those instincts is a really positive thing.
Can you imagine being in the White House and seeing TV that's saying White House bloodbath, possibly as soon as this weekend. I mean, can you imagine what that's like to work in the White House when you know all of the televisions are on and everybody's looking and going, because you don't know if it's true or not.
Yeah, and every one of your enemies in the administration is leaking against you, and yeah, you know, you're probably like, leaking against all your enemies. It's an impossible.
I couldn't live like that.
No, I wouldn't, and I wouldn't want to. You know, I think, though, when it comes to, a lot of this is, there's some of it that's leaking, but a lot of it is really like, you know, I think Trump likes this. He said he likes the conflict.
Oh, he likes conflict and chaos.
And he thinks it works well. I tend to believe that if he stopped, you know, when you're talking about tweeting, that doesn't mean you stop tweeting, but I think everyone understands what you're talking about when you say that, which is, you know, the really outlandish sort of stuff. You know, the attacking people's appearances and,
Stop.
You know, like all that stuff. I can't imagine, and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but is there one Trump supporter that exists today that goes away if he stops, you know, if he stops making fun of, you know, people's facelifts, right? Like, there's no one who's like, oh, I am no longer on the Trump bandwagon because of that.
No.
Because he stopped doing it. I do think there's a group of people that would help him when it comes to approval rating and success and support. If he were to stop the flares, the craziest stuff he does, and pare that back 10-20%, there's a group of people who would like his policies enough to become supporters. And those people, you know, why not try to bring those in? I don't think you lose any of the other people by not doing it. So why not try to bring those people in the fold? And then your approval rating, instead of it being 37, is 45. And you're right in the normal sort of range of a president as he maybe goes into that second term. It's still going to be difficult, but...
So I want to ask you a tough question.
Yes.
We're going to take a break, and I want you to answer this question.
Oh, good. You're going to be diamond in the break to think about it. Good.
Yeah. I want to ask this question. We've asked supporters, what could he possibly do that you would finally say, okay, I can't tolerate that in a president, okay? What does he have to do before you say he might be Reagan? He might be one of the better presidents we've had in a long time.
It starts with inventing a flux capacitor.
I'll get the full answer in a second. More bad news about the data breach from that major credit card bureau, that credit bureau. It's an additional 2.4 million Americans.
Just the 2.4 million, though?
But that's it.
There's not
that's
more it. Than that, though. It's a maximum of 2.4 million, right?
Well,
because there's no other, but no one else has been breached, and that's great. At
well,
least
there's
we're
the
safe.
There's the 147.9 million.
How many was that?
147.9, just half of the country.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not
okay.
That bad.
So it's really just half. Okay, so the additional, they also had their social security numbers stolen and their driver's license number. So, but the good thing is, when you're doing something important, no one asks you for your driver's license number or your social security number. Right?
Right.
So you That's have good. The name, the address, you have some banking information, driver's license and social security. Nothing is going to happen.
Right, because when they're skeptical of you, to confirm who you are, they'll ask you the things that were stolen. So don't worry. Everything's going to be fine.
It's great. So here's the deal. The new LifeLock Identity Theft Protection adds Norton. Norton Security is going to help protect against the threats to your identity and your devices that you can't easily see or fix on your own. So if you have a problem, they have agents that are going to work to fix it. Now, nobody can stop all cyber threats or prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. But LifeLock, now with Norton Security, is able to uncover the threats that you might otherwise miss. So go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code BECK. Get an additional 10% off your first year. That's promo code BECK. Get an additional 10% off now at LifeLock.com.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.
Glenn Beck.
So I just asked Stu, we were having this conversation off air, because, you know, I really want to be fair to the president. And, You know, I don't cut him, you know, the slack when everybody else will cut him slack. But I also want to praise him when he does praiseworthy stuff. And his policies have been really, some of them have been really good.
Yeah.
The last couple of weeks have been an abomination and just terrified me when it comes to, you know, the way the guns were handled. And then he kind of wiggled out of that. And tariffs. And it looks like he may be wiggling out of that now as well. Or he may just be using some strategy that I've never seen a president. Here's a nice thing about Donald Trump. Why he might be effective. I've always said I've wanted a president with a twitchy eye, where the people who are against him in negotiations are like, that guy's great. He just might do it.
Right.
I always thought, though, that I would be able to understand if he was telling the truth or not. You know what I mean? I don't know where he stands on trade. I don't know where he really stands on guns. I just have to watch his actions. So is there something that, because we've asked, you know, on the cultural issues, he's an abomination on the cultural issues. Barack Obama on the cultural issues was an abomination as well. Just divided us and, you know, Barack Obama was pitting black versus white and rich versus poor, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, that's one side. But on the policy issues, he's been pretty good. He's been better than I expected.
Absolutely has exceeded my expectations on that front. And I think he's convinced me of a few things. And whether this is him precisely or his allowance of the structure around him to make these decisions. Like, for example, he's pretty much won me over that he's able to pick good judges, right? And that's not, I was not there at all, even after his election, mm-hmm. even after he released his list, I didn't mm-hmm. necessarily believe he would mm-hmm. do that. And he has, and he hasn't just done it with Gorsuch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's been a lot of really good choices. I mean, Willett and Ho and Texas, a lot of, you go through a nice list of those. You know, he's been good on environmental policy, in my opinion, because I come from I really hate environmental regulation. I think we're very overregulated in that area. His naming of Pruitt is good. They're talking about potentially elevating him if Sessions leaves, which I think is generally speaking a positive. He's done a good job there. You know, one thing I have been surprised about a little bit, and I think hasn't come to fruition as much as I kind of thought it would, was boldness of policy. There's boldness of talk. The boldness of policy has been oddly absent. For the tax cuts are a good example of that. Like I said, I'm glad the tax cuts passed. It's good to see that we pay lower taxes, and hey, that's great. But that was not a bold plan. It was a trimming. You know, I mean, the bold plan, you can argue on the corporate side, it was pretty bold. Outside of that, you know, it wasn't much of a dramatic tax cut. And that was actually one of the things Larry Kudlow criticized of the tax plan. Mm-hmm. Should have been more dramatic on mm-hmm. the individual side. You know, if he actually adopts the policies of Larry Kudlow, I'm going to be pretty happy on those policies. He has, you know, not necessarily done those yet. You know,
what would it take? Because we always say, what would it take to shake you on our side? What would it take to get you to say, I have to divide him in half? Culturally, I don't know of anything that he could do that would.
I mean, he could change.
I mean, he could. He could change.
But, yeah. I mean, he doesn't seem like he's... Yeah. That's part of his character, of who he is.
Correct. But on policies, you know, you have to be able to say, if you're going to be honest, you have to be able to say, he's pretty good on some of them.
Yeah. I listed a few there. I mean, I think you give him credit where he gets it and maybe not where he doesn't. I mean, you know, the fact that he's launching into tariff talk is a really bad sign. I mean, year one, if he does tariffs this year, year one will be better than year two. He doesn't appear to be headed towards more free market policies. But I mean, if he gets to more free market policies, if he changes some of his outlying, you know, philosophies that I don't appreciate so much, I mean, you could say that he's good on policy. He's done some really good things, I think. Better, much, much more than I think either of us would have predicted coming in. And to be fair, even people who were calling this show saying, you guys got to vote for Trump, you got to vote for Trump. Even they, in their cases to us to vote for Trump, were underselling what he's actually done. Mm-hmm. So, it's a big step. Mm-hmm. You know, he's done some really good things. He's put good people in certain places around him.
Yeah, amazing.
Some of these have been upgrades as they've changed.
Right. And some of them, I mean, he started out with a really dicey band of snakes around him. And he's cut them out, you know, every step of the way. And every time he is replacing them, he seems to be replacing them with better people.
Yeah. And I will say one of the biggest changes that we've seen in the past year, and probably both of our biggest problems with Donald Trump leading up to the election and even after it, was Steve Bannon. And the fact that Steve Bannon is not only gone from the White House, but completely excommunicated mm-hmm. is a really positive thing mm-hmm. for the White House. And even though some of Bannon's policies were okay, you know, not all of them. But, you know, the fact that if he can move away from that sort of economic nationalism and other associated beliefs around him, around Bannon in that sort of circle, it would be great. But, I mean, you know, he's launching into many of them now. So I wouldn't say I'm optimistic. Is there a path where I would say, like, oh, my God, he's a great president on policy? Of course, there's always a path. There's a path for Barack Obama. In his last year, if he reversed all the things that he did and became a conservative,
yeah, but that's,
I would be great. Right. But I don't,
but I,
you know,
think,
I don't think
I think
it's
Trump
realistic.
Is actually on the right road. I mean, if you know, if he's, this seems to be, he seems to be becoming his own man on things. Maybe I'm wrong, but he seems to be coming, you know, making this decision to go to North Korea, making the decision to fire our Secretary of State and replace him with Pompeo seems
Glenn
to be him,
Beck.
Which
Mercury.
is good.
This is the Glenn Beck program.
We're just talking. I want to ask Pat the same question I asked Stu here a little while ago. We've asked the audience for a long time. What would it take for what does Donald Trump have to do to make you go, okay, I can't tolerate that? And I don't know if we've ever gotten an answer, but I wanted to reverse that on us because Larry Kudlow, possibly John Bolton, and Pompeo have been appointed, you know, to the White House staff mm-hmm. this week. All three of those are
really good.
Really good.
Solid. Like, he's been solid in his appointment so far, as a rule.
Well, and this is conversation with Bolton, right? And Bolton, the Bolton thing hasn't. You keep saying that, but that's actually happened.
No, but it's moving in that direction.
Right.
Don't know if it's going to happen. But still, you can't say all of his appointments have been good.
Oh, his nomination of the really bad person bad on religious rights.
Yes.
There was just that. Right. So let's not forget that.
But if people keep the heat on, that's going to be withdrawn, I think.
Hopefully.
Yeah. I mean, that people called in and wrote to the White House and wrote to the Senate and called your senators.
That one was really hard to understand.
Yeah.
Really hard.
Yeah, so she's the head of the EEOC. If you don't know, call your senator and say you must reject the nomination of the EEOC.
First, then call, please. If you don't know, call. No. If you don't know, then call.
Look into it first.
Yes, yeah. Please look into
Find
it.
Find out how bad she is on religious freedom.
Yeah, she's horrible.
She believes that sexual freedom trumps religious freedom.
Right.
You'd have to show me that in the Constitution.
And that's a quote, by the way.
It's a quote.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So anyway, but he hasn't always been good on his nominations. Bannon is a good example of that. Flynn is a good example of that.
Oh, it's been a lot of bad ones, but he's made a lot of good ones too.
Yeah, he has. But you know, just at the time where you think, oh my gosh, this guy could be spiraling into protectionism and everything else, he appoints and where is he on Russia? Okay, well, we know now he just put Pompeo in as Secretary of State, and he ain't easy on Russia. Where is he on trade? He just put Larry Kudlow in. Mm-hmm. So what would it be? Like, I think if they would have repealed Obamacare and they would have opened that up to the free market system.
The first year would have been really hard to argue with.
At all. Except for culturally.
It's still pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if he could fully repeal Obamacare, which they've already removed the mandate, so it's been gutted anyway. But if you totally remove that, if you do what you said you were going to do on immigration and drop this 2 million people with a past citizenship on DACA, I mean, that's terrible policy. That's Ronald Reagan policy. It doesn't work.
Did you see the Ann Coulter thing today? She tweeted Trump's Kate Steinle, and I guess an illegal immigrant, DACA recipient.
Really?
Murdered somebody, and a year into the presidency, and she's like, that's not okay. It's an interesting point, because, you know, and Ann Coulter holds the line pretty hard on the immigration stuff.
Oh, that's all she cares about.
It does seem to be the only issue.
It's why she was
about.
So adamant about him in Trump We Trust, and now she's starting to turn on him for the same reason.
Yeah, she gives the border wall update every day about how they haven't built any of the border wall and everything like that.
Well, you and I predicted that a long time ago.
It's true.
I will say, we would eat our underwear if he would have built 90% of what they promised. It's not going to be anywhere near that.
It does. Well, no. He's not even saying he wants to build 90% of it anymore.
No, he's not.
And now it's more like 30-40%.
So he'd have to get back, you know, to what he promised on immigration and maybe another deeper tax cut.
They're talking about that now.
Uh-huh.
That's exciting. I mean, you know, I mean,
that would be great.
I think this is another point of that. These special elections should indicate to the Republicans that they may only have control of the House for another 8 to 10 months.
Yeah, they're worried about it.
You better move. And do, if you want another round of tax cuts, do it right now.
They just lost in Pennsylvania, and so they're starting to raise the alarms. And yeah, it's because you guys suck. You don't stand for anything. You don't stand for anything. And every single time you get into trouble, you do the same thing. You moderate. Well, why would I want a Republican who acts like a Democrat when I can vote for an actual Democrat, if that's what I want? It never makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. It never makes sense. And they do this every single time. You need to go back to conservatism. And if they did that, I think they'd be fine. I think they'd win.
I think this is an argument against making mass sort of wholesale changes in the cabinet right now, and that you may very well only have 8 to 10 months to do anything bold, because you could lose the House. I mean, there's a legitimate chance that could happen.
Yeah.
So if you get, you know, the government operations swallowed up in trying to confirm, and I know it's the Senate, but confirm all the, you know, all of these different changes of positions, you are going to push the ball down the road even further for good policy changes. And I know they always say, oh, well, you can walk and chew gum at the same time. You can't walk or chew gum ever. There's no reason for us to believe you can do both. Because I've never seen you, the gum you paste on your face, it misses your mouth, and you fall over every time you try to walk.
Let me ask you this. What do you think about Rand Paul, as I understand his position? But what do you think if Pompeo, the CIA director, is also snubbed by him? And if Bolton was chosen, I guarantee you that Rand Paul's not going to vote for him.
And wasn't Rand Paul's thing, it's constitutional for me to approve him? Wasn't that him?
He was the guy that was voting
for all the Democrat nominees under Obama, and now all of a sudden, nobody's good enough for you? Thought they were serving at the pleasure of the president, and it was your constitutional duty to approve them.
That is a great point.
That's what his mindset was.
Okay, so when you can't get anything from the president from going along because it's Barack Obama, you just think, well, maybe I can get something by going along on my constitutional right. Maybe. However, now I've got a pressure point for the president. I know he wants something. So what can I get in return?
Oh, yeah. That's not a principled position that you're describing. You're describing a negotiating position, which is not something that I thought we were looking for. So
I'm just saying that's how you explain that.
And
yes, it might be true. But I mean, this and to show you how crucial this is, right? They've got 51 Republicans here to vote for them.
Mm-hmm.
50 without Rand Paul. And, you know, John McCain is, you know, not been doing well.
He's another non-torture guy.
Present all the time. Also a non-torture guy.
Mm-hmm.
Reason.
I'm a non-torture guy, but I'm just what you think is torture.
Yes, exactly. So that's one of the things.
Is pouring some water over somebody's mouth.
And Paul's
with a rag in it.
Opposition is the torture thing. Is also, you know, are we going to go to war? He's very anti all the wars, and he believes this team, you know, Pompeo and potentially Bolton as well, is going to give you an aggressive, hawkish stance that they don't want.
You feel that way yourself?
I think it definitely is a move in that direction. I mean, Tillerson was the guy who was always talking down these conflicts.
I mean,
Pompeo is much more aggressive. I think it's I think it's a good move from Tillerson to Pompeo, but that is the potential risk.
I mean, you want to, and I think a solid, sharpened war instrument, Nikki Haley, John Bolton,
Pompeo, Kelly, you got a pretty effective war. Yeah, you've got a
sharp.
That's really good. I mean, those are the guys I would want to be.
He's worried about the drums of war with Iran, though. I don't want a war with Iran either. Do you?
I don't want to war with Russia.
I don't want any war with anybody.
You always want it to be last resort.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, if you look at this, if let's just say, take an another one of the 17 Republican candidates, take Jeb Bush, take Marco Rubio, take whoever you want, Chris Christie, and throw them in the White House. If they put a team together of Haley, Bolton, Pompeo, that is an absolute
rock star team,
and very
hawkish
Republican establishment type of people.
Yeah.
It's interesting because he's obviously the kind of a drain the swamp type of guy, and some of his early nominations were in that realm. But this is a very standard Republican team. It's a good Republican team.
It is.
I feel like
For what their jobs that they're asked to do, they're perfect.
And Haley's doing it.
Would you want Haley
job?
To be saying anything other than what she's saying?
No,
in the
my
UN?
Gosh, she's
I
great.
I love it.
Do we have the Nikki Haley audio? Could we play that, please? Here she is yesterday at the United Nations on Russia.
Russia failed to ensure Syria destroyed its chemical weapons program. Russia killed the Joint Investigative Mechanism when it found Assad liable for chemical attacks. Russia used its veto to shield Assad 5 times last year. It has also provided cover for Syria in The Hague at the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. The Russians complained recently that we criticized them too much. If the Russian government stopped using chemical weapons to assassinate its enemies, and if the Russian government stopped helping its Syrian ally to use chemical weapons to kill Syrian children, and if Russia cooperated with the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons by turning over all information related to this nerve agent, we would stop talking about them. We take no pleasure in having to constantly criticize Russia. But we need Russia to stop giving us so many reasons to do so.
She's a rock star.
She's really good.
She is really good. She's the best. There have been 3 great UN ambassadors in my lifetime. Jean Kirkpatrick.
John Bolton.
And her.
Yeah.
I mean, just rock star. You remember Jean Kirkpatrick? She was. She'd just light your hair on fire. You'd be like, okay, Jean. All right, whatever. Whatever Gene says. Please don't let Gene speak again, please.
All right, Pat Gray Unleashed coming up on the Blaze Radio and TV networks. Also get it on the podcast. If you go to the iTunes store, you can sign up there, as well as anywhere podcasts are. Pat Gray Unleashed.
Once again, Liberty Safe, bringing you hundreds in savings on their top line safes. All classic selects and national Magnum safes are on sale, including Liberty's Centurion 24 with a flex interior and E-lock. I'm telling you, Liberty they make these great, great safes. Really great. If you go to a Cabela's store, it's a Liberty safe. They just put the Cabela's logo on it, but it's by Liberty. They're really great for anything. If you need a great safe for your guns or you have valuables or whatever, they have 350 dealers nationwide. Delivery and installation is easy. There is now no excuse to not own a Liberty safe. They're offering payments now as low as $20 a month. They're an amazing company with very high integrity and stand behind all their safes. There is nothing like owning a Liberty safe. Peace of mind, lifetime warranty, in-home delivery, unmatched in the industry. Liberty Safe. Go there now. Liberty Safe, now with 12 months interest-free payments or as low as $20 a month on approved credit. You need to act now. The deal ends March 26th. You need a Liberty safe. Your valuables are always protected with a Liberty safe. LibertySafe.com, the homes of the best built safes on the planet. LibertySafe.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So, United Airlines,
They took a passenger because they were overbooked, and they drugged the passenger off the plane. Now, they've issued an apology for a dog that died mid-flight because they told the owner that they had to stuff him into an overhead bin.
So weird. That is so, so strange. Like, I didn't that... Again, United Airlines, really bad job. I think this needs to be said off the top. But what on earth was the passenger... Like, I would never accept... Would you ever accept that?
No.
With your dog?
No, they called it a tragic accident. No, it wasn't an accident. That's what happens when you put dogs in a place with no ventilation. And you stuff them in. That's... I would
have surprised. I don't think I
would have said, absolutely not. Would absolutely you, not. Would, I would have walked off the plane.
Absolutely would have walked off the plane. Would you have thought it was an airtight containment, like that they wouldn't be able to breathe in there? I don't know that I would
if there were other things in the overhead luggage, you know, if it was all by itself in that overhead space, it wouldn't occur to me.
I mean, I still wouldn't allow it to happen, but I wouldn't think the dog would necessarily die from it. By the way, people are trying to say that they are, you know, 5% of the animals shipped on United Airlines die. That is not accurate at all. The correct number is it's 2.24 per 10,000. Now, that's a fairly high number for an airline. For example, American is 0.87 per 10,000.
Well, I know. I have to tell you, I know that... I've tried to ship dogs and things, you know, moving, et cetera, and the airlines have always been really strict on, you know, it's too hot, to go underneath the plane. They've always seemed to be, you know, very cautious. I mean, nobody wants to kill an animal, you know. United might.
I don't think they do.
No, I don't think they do.
But I mean, again, it's, you know, it's one of those things I think pet owners generally freak out about. And it's one of these big incidents because it looks so bad. And there's been a couple of them recently that have been high profile. It's not really a gigantic systemic problem for airlines to kill animals. It's fairly rare. I mean, again, you know, the average airline, it's 0.8 animals per 10,000 die. That's the ratio, 0.8 per 10,000. So again, it's incredibly rare to happen. You want it to...
Do they require you to put the dog... I've seen people sit with dog... I've practically seen people say, no, it's a... it's a medical alligator. They come on with, you know, support animals all the time, and little teeny dogs. I see little teeny dogs sitting in people's laps all the time.
I've traveled with my dog, my little dogs before, and sat them right under the seat. You know, you put the little carrier in front of them, open up the little zipper, they pop their head out. Like, I mean, it's, a lot of that's pretty standard. But I mean, we can get overwhelmed by one crazy incident.
Yeah. Here's the deal. You know, United Airlines, if this is your policy, you should change it, or you should adopt a grander strategy and partner with Planned Parenthood and just put Down syndrome children in the overhead luggage.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.